It has recently dawned on me that this energy pattern and belief deserving of love is a main missing factor that, by its absence, explains so much of human behavior. Today's talk is about deserving love. It's both a simple concept and a very complicated concept. I remember my Roman Catholic catechism classes that started when I was in the first grade in public school. God was love, omnipresent, meaning he was everywhere, omniscient, meaning he knew everything, and omnipotent, meaning he was all-powerful. Even though by the time I reached first grade, I had grown into a boy starting from a fertilized ovum inside my mother, had learned to walk, talk, read, write, and think, had been fed many nutritious meals, and had breathed many breaths, had healed from numerous scrapes and cuts, diseases such as chickenpox and mumps, and more. I was told that to earn God's love, I had to obey a long set of rules to include not eating meat on Friday, attending Mass every Sunday and every holy day, being subjected to various ritualistic milestones such as baptism, First Communion, confirmation. Because Augustine popularized the idea of original sin about 453 A.D., I was not deserving of love. Thanks to Eve and Adam, I was born a bad human being, according to my upbringing. Years later, I joked that if General Motors or Ford manufactured one defective automobile after another, I wondered if we would blame the individual automobiles for their defects. Too bad the Creator couldn't create defect-free people. It is pretty common for children to be trained in a perform-for-love environment. If you clean your plate at dinner, if you clean your room in the morning, if you get A's in your exams, and if you don't embarrass your parents in front of the neighbors, then you deserved love. If love was in limited supply in your family, then you learned to compete with your siblings for it. Like a litter of newborn puppies discovering a mother with not enough teats, the more aggressive got more, and the youngest, less aggressive, got shorted. Over the years, I have come to the conclusion that our biological parents are temporarily our babysitters. Our real parents are Father, Mother, God, Divine Consciousness. That means if our bio parents didn't kill us or destroy our souls, when we attained a certain age, maybe 16 years old or 18 or 20 or something like that, we could embark on our own search for our real parents. And we can stop fussing and complaining about the imperfections of our bio parents. The flow of divine consciousness that is automatic and constant proves that all life, all existence, are deserving of love. This is simple. What is complicated is for each of us to, 1, believe constantly that we are deserving of love, 2, believe constantly that everyone and everything are also deserving of love. Everyone you know has had the flow of life force grow them into people. Yet we don't see this process as an act of love and evidence that we are loved. It is explained by the science community as a natural set of chemical and physical and hormonal reactions without explaining what power or consciousness is actually behind the natural part. It's a common expression to say, if you don't have it, you can't give it. This could be the main reason those who feel disconnected, unprotected, and disrespected harbor anger, self-hatred, depression, hopelessness. This brings to mind the famous question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I don't know the best answer to that question, but I would say, regarding our deserving of love, that being loved precedes being loving. The feeling of being loved is enjoyable, to say the least. Once we know those feelings, we will want others to know them too. Over the years, I've realized a strong tendency of mine to make what I know known to others. We have a natural impulse to grow and help others grow, to learn and help others learn. I believe that our impulse to be loving is divine consciousness working in us, for us, and through us. We can thwart that impulse, but the negative consequences can be catastrophic. If we see our behaviors and those of others as being the quest for love, things make more sense, and we can learn to be more compassionate. I don't know very much about myths, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, Jason and the Golden Fleece, or others. But what are they really striving for? Was it really love that would result if they were successful in their quests? Men strive for money, but is it because money is seen as a precursor to love? I work out in a gym 3 times a week. Are muscles and increased strength the end goal, or do I like myself more if I exercise? Do I think I am more attractive and more likely to be loved if I am physically fit? Is Donald Trump's behavior driven by one single impulse, the desire to be loved? Will he do anything to get energies that he associates with love? Herein lies the problem and the challenge. If you don't like Donald Trump's policies and actions, the normal reaction is to resist him. Resistance and criticism to him is apparently interpreted as him not deserving of love. He becomes even more extreme in his behaviors. I believe we feed what we fight, and Trump seems to prove that view. What you resist, persist, is a well-known cliché. In my all-time favorite book, Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, Christ advocates unconditional love as the ultimate goal. For those who are like me, unconditional love seems very, very far away as a habit pattern. In the meantime, Christ says that balancing your self-interest with the self-interest of others and developing the mindset of brotherly love toward everyone are big steps in the right direction. It's easy to shower the plants and trees and animal life in my neighborhood with love. Birds of different species, rabbits galore, sitting still and then scurrying into hiding, induce love and tenderness in me. It is not so easy to have those same feelings consistently for myself or my fellow human beings. Perhaps animals are judged more kindly, or not at all, because I don't have many expectations of them. I guess I expect birds and rabbits to behave like birds and rabbits, whatever that means. Catherine wants rabbits to not eat the flowers she just planted. I consider rabbits to be of a higher consciousness than flowers, so I don't find anything wrong with the flowers being eaten, but of course, I didn't buy them and go through the trouble of planting them. Catherine wants them to grow into their full beauty. So, maybe neighbors walking by can be impressed with our flowers. In a conversation recently, it was suggested to me that I hold people and things to a military standard. At first, I wasn't sure what that meant, but I think I get it. There is a task orientation in the military that has clearly defined ways to do things and outcomes that are acceptable. Doing things half-assed doesn't work. Unfortunately, I can apply those standards to people I don't know and with whom I will never have a conversation that would enable me to grasp their realities. This, of course, leads to upset and conflict due to the unfulfilled expectations. I imagine that our traumas are related to this sequence of events. If you've ever had a trauma, you might want to consider this statement. Write it down and see if it applies to you. Here goes. I expected love because I felt I was deserving of love, but I got the opposite and I wasn't prepared for it. I'll say that again. I expected love because I felt I was deserving of love, but I got the opposite, and I wasn't prepared for it. That sequence touches upon unfulfilled expectations and thwarted intentions. If the communication we received as attacks, could have been criticism or emotional or physical attacks, ridicule, embarrassment, and so on, we may have developed beliefs that affected our trust, our willingness to express and manifest, even our ability to grow, be happy, and succeed in life. It would be interesting and valuable if we could plot on a timeline traumas of this sort. On a horizontal line, from before conception to 120 years, and where we are right now, and see, look at those traumas that you've experienced, and see if they fit that pattern that I just described. Another use of this idea is to recall the actions that we took that hurt other people, maybe our pets, and so on, that were deserving of love, but of course, they didn't get it. And then add in those things that we did, if other people knew, would have proved we didn't deserve love. These events may be related to mistakes, deliberate wrongdoing, refusing to consider consequences, sins, etc. When we break the family rules or tribal rules, fears of not being loved are real. We deserve love. However, if we believe that, for reasons known to us, we don't deserve love, those beliefs will dominate. Those beliefs are erroneous. What we do and don't do are based on our levels of awareness. We cannot act outside our level of awareness at any one point. We have to change our relationship with the events and participants, including ourselves, in order for our beliefs to change. A belief is an imagined constraint about life that impacts our ability to express and manifest. A simple example. If I believe it's going to rain today, I am going to modify my plans because of that. Beliefs are constraints. When we understand that the impulses that make up our consciousnesses are what led us to act or not act, to say or not say, etc., we will start to shift our self-view. We deserve love, and these false blockages will start to dissolve. The devil didn't make you do it. Your consciousness did. Our habitual behaviors that are driven by our desire to be loved and loving will come to be under our conscious control. That's our goal. We now do things to make ourselves, our bodies, our minds, our status more appealing. Here's an example. My haircut and beard trim recently had the purpose of improving my appearance. I wanted to look better to myself and also to others. This is the same reason I exercise. It's the same reason I watch what I eat. It's the same reason I weigh myself twice a week, as well as other habits and processes. Everything we do and don't do is about love. Understanding this truth means we can know enough about life to begin becoming a better, happier navigator and creator in life. And this is a long-term process, so we should start now. We have been trained to do what authority figures tell us to do. If we were sufficiently obedient, authority declared us to be deserving of love. If we failed to follow authority's demands, we were told in various ways that we were not deserving of love. Life is governed by authority. If a police officer pulls you over, it is because he or she is the authority. If you are a student in an elementary school, the teacher is the authority. At home, one or both parents are the authorities, maybe an older sibling. Each level in a hierarchy is authority to the levels below it. If you are a parent, you are authority to your children and to their friends. One thing seems clear. That authority gets to tell people if they are deserving of love. Priests and ministers, politicians and presidents, bosses and business owners, husbands and wives, all get to say who is deserving of love. People use the Jewish Bible and the Christian Bible to declare that they know who God says is deserving and not deserving of love. Jesus said God is love, but men have misinterpreted this to mean God doles out love to the deserving and withholds it from the undeserving. And, by the way, the undeserving are almost always people of other faiths and colors. Notice the authority that claims that authority as their right because the ultimate authority, with a capital A, told them so. The foolishness of the divine right of kings still exists today in some European countries. Every Christian huckster has a story about God giving them authority, and as a result, you should buy whatever is being sold. My recommendation is to become your own authority. Think for yourself. Make up your own rules and establish your own values and then follow them. Making rules for others to follow is a common human practice of injustice. Don't do that. Decide for yourself that you are the authority that says you are deserving of love and then practice that feeling until it guides your life. In the process, seek to experience and understand your source of being. Your source of being is your source of life, growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of your needs, work, survival, rhythm, and the law of cause and effect. Our lack of understanding about God, the source of our being, infinite intelligence, divine consciousness, and whatever other names you want to use, makes us anxious, so we look for love in all the wrong places. Just like the country western song says. Working to change our beliefs will result in our knowing that we are deserving of love and have been all along. That will be life-changing. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8. In Christ Returns reveals startling truth. See if it sounds like you are being told that you are deserving of love. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.